This last week has been filled with passionate discussions about same-sex marriage. Late last week, I spoke with John Roscombe from the Institute of Public Affairs about political correctness. Now, his argument was that we do need to hear everyone's ideas, that everyone needs to be able to think this through and to have a clear rationale for their opinions, but that respectful free speech is the way through. My next guest is ethicist Associate Professor Leslie Cannold, who takes the view that the plebiscite process is in itself an unethical one, a flawed process on an ethical basis. I spoke to her before we went to air, but tell me your thoughts on this. 1300 681 666 is the number. The SMS 0467 922 666. On Twitter, we are at ABC Canberra. Leslie, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, there have been plenty of practical problems surrounding this plebiscite idea, but your issue is with the basic notion itself. Tell me what you think is wrong with this as an approach to changing the law.
Well, I guess I basically think that we're asking the community to opine on whether or not some of us aren't really fully human, and therefore we don't deserve our human rights. And I feel like if we're going to have that, you know, polling, let's ask all of us what our opinions are as to whether or not gay and lesbian people are fully human and deserve their human rights. Well, what about single mums? What about women who have abortions? What about Aborigines? I'm not really sure that is a question for public opinion and a sort of poll. I find it quite offensive, really, that we, you know, on the one hand, we have anti-discrimination laws, which very clearly say human means human. We're not back in the 1800s when we used the word human, but really we meant white men. We've grown up, I think, about that. We've decided women get included in the definition of human. We've decided, regardless of your skin color, you get included in the definition of fully human. And somehow, all of a sudden, we're going back now. So I just wonder if we're going back and we're running against our own anti-discrimination laws, we're running up against our own human rights laws, which are international laws that we've signed. We want to carve out some people and have a good old yarn in the community and ask if that's okay. You know, should we carve these people out? Let's not carve these people out. I feel like it's open season on the whole notion of human rights. I didn't think that's where we were.
Much of the opposition we've heard is because of the consequences people fear will flow from this, the possibility of vilification and bigotry on all sides. I think same-sex couples with children are particularly fearful about the damage a national debate might do to their children, what those children will hear about their own families. Do you share those concerns about what might come out of the debate?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the whole notion that the debate is happening is problematic. And I worry about what that says to the people who are in this community and what it says to them when others don't speak up, which is why I am speaking up and saying I think it is wrong that this debate is even happening, that a poll is being taken about whether or not your parents or whether you meet the definition of fully human and therefore get to have your human rights. And, of course, I fear what the arguments are going to be to argue that some people deserve to be carved out. I mean, what could those arguments possibly be other than prejudiced, discriminatory, intolerant, bigoted? Why would anybody who is a person who doesn't believe those things are good things want to have that kind of a conversation, and how could you not be worried about what's going to get said in that conversation?
No, I've had a couple of people say to me, well, why should politicians decide a moral issue? And I've got a couple of questions around that. Tell me how you respond to the idea that this is a moral issue. What moral might mean in this context?
Well, I guess that's what is so confusing for me. So I think we have had a long history, like I think this kind of legitimizes the idea that, you know, you can have differing views about this and still be an ethical person. And I guess I feel like in the 21st century, it isn't really okay to claim the moral high ground and argue that some people are less than fully human. And yet I believe that's what the religious groups that are driving this are arguing, and yet they constantly claim the moral high ground. And just having got this vote up, I think, gives them that sense that, yes, you know, because a small group of religious people believe that their religion tells them. And I think we have to be really clear about this, that many Christians do not believe this, and they don't believe they're being represented by the Australian Christian lobby. But there's a small group that do, and they believe that, that their view, and we have to think back of, about the history of all of this. So the churches used to decide, you know, what the law was going to be. They ran the place. And I think, you know, there's a view that many people have that they still ought to, that there still ought to be kind of a view that whatever Christianity thinks is right and wrong is what's right and wrong, and therefore our laws should reflect what's right and wrong, and therefore they should reflect what the Christian point of view is. Now, people can say, well, look, we're a secular society. Of course we don't believe that anymore. But look what's happening. Because a small group has raised concern that their view about gay and lesbian and the whole LGBTI community, they've raised concerns about that. We are suddenly, as a nation, having a plebiscite about it.
Leslie, do you suspect or believe that there is an unspoken current here to the effect that same-sex attraction, that, that people who are homosexual are intrinsically immoral?
Well, again, I mean, I don't want to prejudge or even give, you know, voice to the kinds of arguments that are going to be made here. But I can't stomach the idea that we are having an opinion poll about whether or not certain people are entitled to the full set of rights, that certain people should be carved out. And when you argue that people need to be carved out, you're going to have to take the second step and argue why. So you must have to be saying that on some level, there's something wrong that means those people don't qualify as fully human. So what did we used to say about women? Oh, it was something about their uteruses, you know, that made them kind of less than fully human. They were less moral. They weren't able to kind of take principled stands. Those were the kinds of arguments that used to get made. What did we used to say about black people? That something about their skin color made them more animalistic. None of the arguments were ever of a kind that sought to in any way dignify those people, because when you're arguing someone's less than fully human, you're not saying that, that they, you're not giving them the dignity of being human. You're saying they're less than human. So those arguments are never going to be edifying. They're never going to be the kind of arguments you'd want those people to hear or their children to hear if you believe that they are fully human and they don't deserve that indignity and that discussion and debate about their humanity.
My guest here on ABC Canberra Mornings is Leslie Kennold, Associate Professor Leslie Kennold, who's an ethicist, and we're talking about the ethics of the plebiscite process, not so much the complications which are being thrashed out now, but the very nature of the plebiscite process itself. You're with me, Genevieve Jacobs. Leslie, as I said a moment ago, quite a persistent theme that comes through in discussion on this is why should a small group of people make the call, and to which I've sometimes responded because that's how we run a parliamentary democracy. But do you see the viewpoint that many people feel this is a major social change and they want to have a say about it as a part of the community? How do we respond to that in an ethical fashion?
Well, I contest that it is a major change. I mean, and in some ways I think that's what kind of the whole problem is here. So nobody is saying that you must marry somebody of the same sex. Nobody is saying that if you are a minister of a particular religion, you are required to marry anybody. And if you want to decide not to marry, you know, certain people for whatever your reasons are, you don't have to do that. And that's what freedom of religion always was about. It was about being able, as an individual, to say, I have a right to pray to the God I want, to go to the synagogue I want. And religion can be kind of exclusive within, you know, that kind of realm. But it doesn't, it isn't compelling anybody to do anything they don't want. And so what is the big imposition on me that I need to have my opinion taken into account, that somewhere outside of my life, two people who love each other who happen to be of the same sex are going to get married? I won't even know about it unless I decide to inform myself about that. So I really do struggle to understand why it is such a big imposition, unless you believe that your point of view should not only govern your life, but should govern everybody else's life. Why? Because it's the right point of view, or it's what God says, and you know your God is right. And that is not, that's chauvinistic, and it's not what we believe in a secular society. We believe you should have the freedom to live according to your beliefs, but that other people are entitled to have that freedom too.
And look, I would point to the fact, and you alluded to this a moment ago, that we thought many social changes would bring with them disaster, reaching all the way back to things like votes for women, all kinds of similar changes, no-fault divorce law, many things that upset various people's views about the natural order, but were in fact founded on the principles of equality of citizenship at the time.
That's right, or religious freedom, because in fact religious freedom properly understood is that nobody's point of view should be able to dominate in the public square and everybody's religion needs to be kept out of it, which is why we allow that sort of equality. So I think, you know, the sky falling in stuff, anybody who's advocated for social change, and I certainly am one of those people, we always hear that argument. And when we wake up the next morning, the sky has not fallen in, and in fact the only thing that has happened is that people who believe that their point of view should not only govern their own lives but should govern everybody else's have to get around, you know, get their heads around the idea that, no, that's not the way it works in a secular democracy. That's the only earth that shakes, because for everybody else, life goes on, because you're not being compelled to do anything. You're simply allowing other people to have the freedom to live according to their own values and their own beliefs.
What about the argument that this debate at some fundamental level does involve children and their welfare? Now, again, I can't see that we have ever predicated the right to marry on fertility as some kind of prerequisite. Same-sex couples are already having children. They'll continue to do so. Many children are born in all kinds of situations, for good or for ill. But is there an ethical aspect that you can see to whether children are a deciding factor in this debate?
Well, I sort of struggle, you know, somebody would have to spell that out for me. For one, I know that the research doesn't actually support that. So the one difference is that we, you know, the research shows that we tend to see between children who are raised with same-sex couples and children who are not, is that the children who are raised in same-sex couples tend to be more tolerant, which you can imagine how that comes about. But other than that, we don't actually see any difference. So that argument kind of gets stopped for me on the empirical factual end of it. But I never even understood it, you know, even if you were to concede that there was some kind of difference, because what difference does the marriage make? So in other words, in some ways what we're doing here, I'm not a big advocate of marriage, and there's many people in the gay community who aren't either. I'm not married myself, for instance, but I have a partner. But that's not the point. The point is that freedoms that are entitled, that all humans are allowed to have, that all Australians are equal. So we don't say that some can have the freedom to do something and some can't, because a small minority believes that those people don't deserve to have the same human rights as everybody else. So we need to have a situation where we stand by our view that all Australians are created equal, that we all are fully human and therefore we all have the human rights. And we then choose to exercise them as we see fit. And for those who want to exercise the right to be married, they're entitled to do that.
And I think also, Leslie, it just occurs to me, partly from having watched The Handmaid's Tale recently, that this argument does harken back at some level to the notion that a woman's primary value is in her fertility, to reproduce for the good of the species. Mm. And if she is allowed to enter a partnership in which that is not a possible outcome without outside intervention, then there's something sort of intrinsically disordered in that.
Yes. And look, the church holds to these views. And I don't, you know, I guess what's problematic for me is I don't really want to be in the business of criticizing any of those views. I'm only critical of them because they're being forced in my face, because I'm now having to vote in a plebiscite that I feel is profoundly insulting and degrading to my fellow citizens who are from the LGBTI community. But if you want to go off and believe in those kinds of ideas, okay, I think they're really foundationally mistaken. But you can go off and live by those ideas, because we live in a free country that allows you to do that. The problem is when you try to insert that into the public square and deny other people those rights because of what you believe. And we just can't allow that to happen. But yes, all of those notions are profoundly conservative. And that's what the conservative point of view is arguing, that somehow because marriage has traditionally been between a man and a woman for reasons you've just described and many more, that's how it should stay. But that's not a compelling argument. And again, if it's a compelling argument for you, okay, go get married. The argument has to be a different one when you argue, and therefore, because I believe that, other people shouldn't be allowed to get married if they're from the LGBTI community.
Leslie, always interesting to talk to you. Thank you very much for your very considered point of view, and it's been a pleasure to have you with me on the program.
It's a pleasure to speak to you. It always is.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye-bye.